Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back to The Millennial Dentist. I have with me a very, I'm excited about this. This is going to be a fun conversation. He's a millennial, and he's killing it, which is something that I'm all about. So we got Dr. John Pashnishik. Did I do it right?
Close. Oh, that's pretty much it. No, Pashnishik.
Pashnishik. Is that Polish?
It's Ukrainian.
Ukrainian. I like that.
Yeah, pretty close. Pretty close, though. You know, the little village that my grandparents grew up in has gone back and forth between being Polish and Ukrainian.
Oh, so it wasn't that far off.
The maps are being redrawn, yeah.
Well, that happens.
Yeah, right? Eastern Europe.
So here's kind of what I want to do. You're Indiana, right?
Yes, that's correct.
You graduated when?
2010.
And here's kind of where I want to go with this tonight, because we could talk a lot of stuff, and we've gotten to hang out a bunch lately, and I think what you're doing is awesome, and I think it's a big thing. You have a lot of things going for you, and a lot of things you're doing that our listeners are going to want to talk about. So here's kind of how I want to divide this conversation up. Really, Rayleigh, my dog is like throwing a hissy fit. You've been chilling all night, then you want to go rowdy. Excuse us.
Good dog.
Okay, first off, I want to talk about how you got to where you are. Okay, I want to hear a little bit about your personal journey from dental school to kind of getting into practice. And then I want that to kind of transition into talking about life as an associate. Did you buy or purchase first, or did you read an associate first?
Oh, as an associate first.
Okay, right, perfect. I want to talk about this as life as an associate, into buying your first practice, into now hiring associates, because that to me is like a ton. We could talk about that for a while, I think. And then thirdly, I want to wrap it up with multiple practice ownership, because you know you now own a couple practices and you have a big goal in mind. And so I think it's a really cool journey of what you've done in, you know, less than 10 years. So why don't we just start talking about your dental journey, and I'm going to butt in and ask lots of questions.
Yeah, please do. Well, good. Well, ask any questions you've got while we're going. So, like you said, I graduated in 2010. All right. So all through dental school, I knew that for me, owning a practice was going to be my thing. But I get out of school and feel like maybe I don't have the experience I need to have my own practice. So I do the smart thing and I sign up for a GPR. So I sign up, I get matched with this residency program at the Indianapolis Veterans Hospital. And it was a pretty well-regarded residency program. And I get in there and I realize that, you know, my style doesn't really mesh with the government. And I think now that you've had a chance to know me, you can understand why, you can appreciate it. So my style didn't really mesh with being a government employee. And I actually then decided to leave the residency. I knew I wanted a practice, wanted to own a business, and found a practice in Columbia, South Carolina. And so went, checked it out, you know, thought I was doing all my homework on it. Made an offer was accepted, and I turned in my resignation to the residency. So I dropped off.
So you're how many weeks in residency?
It was months? Like 3 months, four months.
So three months, months, and you're like, screw it, this isn't for me.
Forget it, can't do it. I mean, it was a experience, but it wasn't for me. I mean, let me put it this way. I spent my last month there on an anesthesia rotation where I didn't see a single dental patient. I got to intubate like 25 people. That was cool, but...
So it wasn't necessarily that you just weren't getting, because that's a big question we get a lot, right? Is do I do AGD? Do I do GPR? And my thing is like, I think there's really good ones out there, but I think you need to know what you're getting into before you just sign up for it thinking that's going to be like a year of like really good, more dentistry or something.
Totally. Totally. So, and I've got my own feelings about a GPR, you know, 1 year AGD now. And frankly, I think you can do better by finding a super high volume practice that just needs a lot of basic restorative and extractions. Just go work your tail off there. Pay yourself like you would be paid at the residency program. So like a PGY1 probably makes like 45 grand now.
Yeah.
Pay yourself 45 grand, take the rest and invest it in CE.
Well, if you figure, yeah, I mean, I made like 150 probably my first year out. And
right. And I, just yeah. Sink a bunch of that into CE, save up for a house, down payment, whatever. Buy a hot tub.
Because I think I'm definitely a proponent of buying hot tubs. But I think the problem is that the majority of AGDs or GPRs are not forward thinking enough to where you're getting as big a return on that as you could just going to the CE you want to do.
Absolutely. That's exactly right.
Okay, and we're on the same page on that. Good.
Kind of what I figured out through my residency. So I quit my residency and I pack my car up with all my stuff, everything I've got. I'm leaving Indianapolis and I'm never coming back. So I pack my car and head down there. Meanwhile, I leave my wife back in Indiana and she's trying to sell the house.
Wow.
her employer to be able to do her job virtually, which was unheard of for them. So she's trying to convince them of that, sell the house, and I'm moving down there. So it's this weird situation that we both agreed was going to be okay. And it's time to close on the practice. We're going to sign the paperwork, deal's going down. And it was going down on a Tuesday. Well, I spent the Monday, the day before, in the practice with the selling doc and started poking my head around treatment plans and existing x-rays and things like that, just seeing what was going on in the charts. And things weren't really adding up to me. And I couldn't really figure out what was going on. And, it just seemed like the numbers didn't make sense. And I didn't get a good feeling from the guy. So turns out the numbers might not have been exactly what they were claiming to be. And I realized that after spending the whole night just poring over the P&L, learning how to read a P&L, learning how to do basic accounting functions, and realized that there was definitely something fishy going on. So the next morning,
that was a long night.
It was a long night. It was brutal. And yeah. At the same time, I wanted to do it.
Because you're kind of like, oh shit, this is about to go down and this doesn't look right.
Yeah. But I still wanted to do it because I was obsessed with, number one, I was obsessed with that location. I wanted to be there. But number two, I was almost letting my pride get in the way. And I was saying, God, I told everyone I was leaving, told everyone I was doing this. I told everyone I was smarter than them. And I almost let my pride really dictate what I was going to do. But luckily, I used some real good common sense, did some soul searching, and walked into that bank in the middle of nowhere, South Carolina, and walked into this hot, stuffy room with the banker, the seller, the broker, the insurance agent, all these people that were trying to put this deal together that were standing to make a lot of money on the deal. And I told them all that I wasn't doing it.
Wow.
It was really uncomfortable because you're deep in the South and I'm a Yankee.
Yeah, so you are. Look at this Northerner.
Yeah. See, smarter than us. It's a peeing. And they weren't too thrilled. They weren't too thrilled. It was a little uncomfortable trying to get out of that room. But luckily I made it out of there. There were no Deliverance banjos going when I got in my car. So I tucked tail and ran back to Indiana. And I'm about an hour and a half away. I'm in Louisville, Kentucky. And this whole time I'm just replaying this incident.
What the hell just happened? Yeah.
What the hell just happened? What am I doing? So now I'm this unemployed dentist. And freaking out about this, and my car dies.
Oh,
it just dies, in the middle of rush hour traffic, just a traffic jam all around me. There's no way anything's getting there. So I'm just on the side of the road, just sitting there FML, just kill me.
Yeah, completely.
But then I just kept going back to this, why me? This little pity party. It's just really good to feel bad for myself. And luckily I pulled myself out of that funk pretty quick. I let myself get home. I licked my wounds that night and I woke up in the morning. I said, you know what? Screw it. This isn't me. This isn't me. I'm not that guy. I'm not going to let this one bad thing dictate the rest of my career and the rest of my life.
Wow.
So I went out and I just hit the ground running. I called everyone I knew. I tried to make every connection that I could think of and luckily found a great associateship. So about a week later, found this job.
Wow.
They offered it to me on a Friday. They said, can you start on Monday? And I said, well, let me check my calendar. see you there.
So I want to say, because I think what you said about, I'm really impressed about Because if that's me in that situation and I get there, I'm finding 100,000 reasons to rationalize why the practice can work, why I can fix the numbers, why I can do it. And that's really, really, because I know that there's people out there who get in a situation like that. And, you know, but that was a huge decision you made, because that could have like screwed you on your trajectory of what you wanted to do. Instead, you made a super ballsy decision and just aborted, basically hit the eject button. And I mean, that's impressive. Were you not a little terrified when doing that? Were you not terrified?
I was scared to death, man. I was scared to death. It was, looking back at it now, is one of those defining moments. And we've all had a few. We've all had a few of those defining moments in our life. And I truly believe that was one of those for me. And I needed to do it to get where I was today. Sure. I can guarantee you and I would not be talking right now. You and I would never have met each other. We wouldn't have had the opportunity to do some of the cool things together we did, because that would have set me back. That decision would have set me back.
Wow. Okay. So you take the associateship now. Now, what was this office? Did they just need an associate? Were they doing a lot of stuff, or what kind of, give me the lay of the land there.
Yeah. So it was a really interesting situation. So this was the private practice of two brother dentists. And the elder brother, he started a chain of emergency dental clinics in Indianapolis. So he started buying up practices, started turning them into emergency, urgent care places, and built up a big enough group that he eventually was able to sell it off. And so he sold off the group and then still wanted to practice. So he went back into private practice with his brother. And about 2 years after that, that's when the company that he sold came calling him and saying, "We don't know what we're doing." Because it was bought by private investors. They said, "We don't know what we're doing. We need you back here to be the CEO, run the thing again." So he was leaving the private practice to go back to the corporate world. And so that's what I was taking his position. And this is like one of those like larger than life kind of guys. This is like, if you could imagine like a way less skilled Tarun.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
Nowhere on that level, but like that kind of personality just like gets people excited and, you know, can motivate people to do stuff. And he just didn't have like the goods to back it up.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
But that's who I was replacing. And those were like crazy big shoes to fill. Like patients were like crying the first time they met. "Oh my God, where's Dr. Dean?" I'm like, "What are you talking about?
I don't know.
I'm here to do your buccal pit."
Yeah. Relax.
I don't have to tell you. So
it's so cool. I was in a residency for 3 months.
Exactly. I quit my residency.
I'm that good. I didn't even need to stay.
Now I can intubate you.
If things go south, you're golden.
Yeah, you're good. Don't worry. We'll make you. You'll make it. So I'm walking into this situation, and it's a busy practice. I mean, it's six doctor operatories. It's three hygiene bays. There's a full-time denture technician in the office.
Wow.
Really high.
Was that hard jumping into that kind of pace?
It was crazy. It was really crazy. I mean, on my interview, they asked me, or the older guy, Dr. Dean, asked me, he goes, "So on Monday, if you had a patient that needed a root canal, core, and a crown on tooth number 3, how long would it take you to get it done?" I'm like, "I don't know. Like, what system do you use?" Like, I'm trying to skirt around. I don't know. I'm like trying to think of anything. "Oh, it depends on the assistant." He's like, "No, could you do that in an hour?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, absolutely."
Yeah, of course. Why not?
He's like, what about surgery? You like surgery?" I was like, "Oh yeah, I love taking teeth out." He's like, "What about impacted thirds?" I'm like, "Sure." He like pulls out a pano. I'm like, "What are you doing?" He goes, "These thirds, how long would it take?" Like, I don't know.
Are they numb yet or not? Or
he's like, "That an hour." And I was like, "Oh yeah, absolutely." Again,
oh my gosh. So just straight up fake it till you make it.
Yes, absolutely.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a neat experience, and actually turned into a really great professional and personal relationship with the younger owner that I was working with on a routine basis. And he was a big mentor for me. I learned a lot about, you know, how to take care of patients, how to talk to patients.
Did that come naturally, or did that, was that something you talked about with him, or was he just, was he willing to mentor you? Because I think that's a big, it's a big concern for a lot of, you know, people going into associateships.
Yeah. And you know what? He didn't offer it up. I just took it.
So you initiated that kind of thing.
I just went in there, and it was never anything formal. It was just, Brian, I'm going to watch everything you do and do what you do because you're super successful.
Yeah.
You've got a killer practice. You've got a team that really loves being here, and you're making it work in like a really, really rough area. So yeah. You're making it work. I want to do whatever you're doing because right. What you're doing is right.
You got the good juice. Yeah.
Yeah. So just, I soaked it all in from him. I learned a lot of things that I didn't want to do, and I got a lot of bad habits from him at the same time. He was a little bit of a pushover with the team.
Sure.
Just, you know, not really incredibly firm with them when he needed to. In fact, I got to fire someone like 3 months into the job. Like, we were talking about the assistant, wasn't really working out well. And
you're like, I'll do it.
No, he was opposite. He went on a sudden vacation and called the office and was like, yeah, we need you to let her go. We need you to let go of Joni, the hygienist. I'm like, are you kidding me?
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great. It was fun. Made somebody cry for the first time.
Oh, gosh.
So, yeah. So I learned some not so great habits from him as well that took a while for me to break as well. So when you're mentoring someone, it's a good thing to pay attention to. Their style isn't always going to work for your style. The stuff they're giving you could be perfect, but you need to really, really refine your delivery and your style.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, because not everybody's going to be necessarily the most outgoing, or then they may be a little more, if you're introverted, or if you like, you know, if you're, because like for me, I'm really laid back, and that laid back works for me, right? Like, I can connect to my patients on a kind of like, you know, a super chill kind of thing. But some people, they're not going to be able to do that. So ultimately, the delivery of the information can be the same. It just is, you got to build your own style to do it. So I think that's a good point.
Exactly. And so that's a good lesson that I learned, but then at the same time, I fell into the same trap and tried to force some of my associates to take on my style. And it's taken me about a year now to really reflect back on that and say, gosh, I'm trying to stuff something down their throat that shouldn't be that way. And so now I'm working on them using their style and their delivery to get the same concept across that I'm trying to teach them.
At this point, did you have any idea what you wanted to do long term, or did you kind of know you wanted to be an owner and that this wasn't going to be an end all be all, or was there an ownership opportunity in that practice, or kind of how did that evolve?
I knew that I wanted to be an owner. That was just my mentality.
You had way too much fun firing somebody. You're like, I got to be able to do this on the reg.
Do this. Yeah. I had that feeling that ownership was for me. And I'd been looking pretty much the whole time I was working there. And there was never anything formal put out there for me. Had there been, I probably would have jumped at it. And again, that could have been one of those moments that, you know, changed my trajectory and changed my career path. And it was for the best. And interesting thing about that associateship is that we operated on a handshake. And I worked for 2.5 years on a handshake. We never had a formal agreement. We never had anything in place. And it worked pretty well. Looking back at it financially, I probably wasn't the most successful I could have been. So that was a huge miss for me.
Yeah, but it's hard to put a value on intangibles though, and things you could have learned or experienced, you know, like.
Sure. But at the same time, there's no reason I couldn't have done all of that and still been on a commission.
That's true.
Where I made the fair rate. There were stretches of time where.
How were you paid at that point?
It was salary.
You were a straight salary. Yeah.
Straight salary the entire time. And then, you know, there were like 4 quarters that were pretty good over what? That would have been 10 quarters. Over 10 quarters, 4 of them were pretty good. And I got a decent bonus check each quarter.
Well, and that's something I'd like to kind of point on too, just for, because I think because what happens, I think, is we graduate and we have a debt load and a lot of that. And we're trying to figure out what the heck, we don't know what we're going to do. We've worked on one patient in an afternoon and that's it. You know, a salary and a guaranteed number sounds really nice. But what I encourage people to do is to look and try to, okay, how can you get based off, you know, if you get 30% of collections or, you know, or 30% of production or, you know, 20%, you know, whatever it is, the number, I like that because that's ultimately like betting on yourself, right? Like, and even if like, and then they're like, well, what if I don't get patients or what if I don't, you know, they don't feed me or help me? I'm like, well, you have a chair, don't you? Like, go get your own patients. Like, go learn to do something that the older doctor doesn't do. Like, you know, to me, you just got this, you just graduated this degree. You put all this money into it. You've got a license to do a lot of stuff. Take advantage of that. You know what I'm saying? And so like for some of yourself, you would have totally benefited from more of a commission-based thing because probably ran with it.
Oh yeah. And you know, halfway into the time that I was employed there, I realized the payment structure wasn't going to change significantly in my favor. And it did. It made me a little bit complacent. You know, I'd been there a year and a little over a year and, you know, nothing changed. I got a little bump in my salary. It was still a great living. I mean, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't really commensurate with what I was providing to the practice. And in a way it really did. It made, no, I'm not going to stick around and take care of that last patient.
It's 4:30. No. It's 4:30 on Tuesday. I'm not sticking around. Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
I'm not starting that root canal. No, you can come back tomorrow.
No, it's funny. I had a patient, I had a periodontist call me or text me the other night and he was like, you know, do you see patients on Friday? And I was like, we don't necessarily are open on Fridays, but I will see patients anytime, you know, like if they're paying me, if it's a $10,000 case, I'll go meet them tonight at midnight. You know, that's the mentality you have to have.
I said that I had a little dinner with the dentist in my group and we had dinner, I take them out once a month and we just chat about stuff. And we were talking about extended hours. We were talking about offering extended hours, opening on Fridays, doing things that patients need, because now, especially more and more, we need to be aware of what our patients need.
The consumer-friendly market, yeah.
Exactly. And if they need, if you're finding out over and over again, so you're getting 10 phone calls a day from new patients saying, are you open on Saturdays? I need a Saturday appointment. If you got 10 of those calls every day, would you be open on Saturdays?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. So we need to react to what the market is asking us. And I said something, I go, I will work at any time of the day. I will see a patient any time of the day, but I'm going to get paid well for it.
Yeah.
So if you need me to come in for your implant at 4 a.m, that's great. But my 4 a.m. implant fee is $6,000.
Yeah.
but I'm happy.
Touché.
And one of the doctors looked at me and goes, or I said, who wouldn't do that? And one of the doctors looked at me and said, I probably wouldn't.
So, yeah, okay. Like, well, that's.
And I said, you know what though, that's fair enough because that's your style, and
you know, and honestly, I don't have a problem with that. I think, and I, this is my thing, you know, especially as a new dentist, you know, I think, and one of the biggest complaints I have about our generation is I think we try to be really picky on what we want. You know, we want to graduate and we want to already be at 4 days from, you know, 8 to 4, and we want to place implants, we're going to do all this stuff, blah blah blah, we want to charge full fees. Well, it's like, what right have you earned by getting that? Like, you graduated, that sure, that's good. And I want to do those things too. But if I'm a patient, why would I go to you and do that when I can go to the guy who's been there for 30 years doing it necessarily? So my thing is like, you know, if you're trying to get out there and make it and you got a new practice and you're wondering why, what makes you different from the other dentists on your street, it's stuff like that. Like, get better hours, you know, because guess what? There's less than 25% of the dentists in my area in Nashville open on Fridays. There's probably less than 5% open on Saturdays. And then extended hours are the same thing. So it's like, especially when you're young and hungry, you know, I think flexibility in that is usual. This is a tangent, but it's a good tangent.
No, I totally agree though. And you said the right thing. At this point in your career, as you're building your name, that's exactly the right way to approach it. Because if you're finding that your 6 and 7 p.m. appointments are booked every single day, and your morning ones are wide open, well, great. You just figured out what your schedule is. You're now the 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. dentist. Okay. Like, that's, you know, so get your stuff done in the morning instead of the evening.
Well, and I'm actually kind of now at a point where I've been open Fridays or like every other Friday a month. Because I'm not trying to work that hard. But I'm now getting to the point where I'm fortunate enough, right? Because I've been out in 2 years practice and that I no longer need to work Fridays okay, to do, earn what I want to earn and do what I want to do. So like now I can be more picky, right? But like when you first graduate, like you don't get the, you don't have the, you don't get the option to do that. Like,
and I, and I'll tell you that even being 2 years in, for most people, that's not really the time that they get to be picky like that. You're lucky that you get to.
Sure.
That's a credit to how hard you've worked, because even 10 years in, most people don't get to have that kind of flexibility and that kind of, you know, dictate what their schedule is going to be. So it's a really good point for the younger docs to just be ready to work. Be ready to work. Yeah. I mean, if you want to work, work. If you don't want to work, be prepared to be complacent as the second chair in a pretty busy office. Yeah. You're gonna be the second chair, and that's fine. You're gonna see the you know, the pain in the ass composite patient. You're gonna see that last person at the end of the
day.
That's
terrible.
You're gonna stick around and do the last check when the senior goes to golf.
Okay, so let's get back on task, because we're getting off task. Okay, now so you've been at this associateship, and now I want to talk a little bit about, because now you've gone from associate to, tell us briefly about buying the first practice, and then I want to talk about what you've seen hiring an associate, not hiring an associate, and then the things basically that you've seen that have worked and not worked, and what are dentists looking for in a good associate?
Got it. Okay. Wow. That's a lot to remember. I'll do my best here. Okay.
I'll remind you. That's what I'm here for.
Well, you're good at that.
I'm a phenomenal MC.
All right. So the first practice, found this place and it just spoke to me. Everything felt right. It was a good situation where there was a retiring younger dentist. She did not need to work anymore.
What did they produce?
It was doing about 700.
Okay. That's a great practice for someone at that point to purchase. Okay, good.
Exactly. It was a gorgeous facility. She had just designed it and built it out. And I felt great about it. Turns out I made two fatal flaws.
Okay.
And I hope that everyone that listens to this, that's in my situation, doesn't ever do this. I paid 100% of the collections for it. And I put myself, but I saw potential. So yeah. I was comfortable with that.
Yeah. Okay.
I was comfortable with it because I saw the potential, but then I made a huger mistake. And the husband of the doctor made his money on commercial real estate, and I did not get a professional to read my lease. And I am still in the midst of a 7-year lease that's at about $7 per square foot higher than the market rate in my area.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. So that's a big mistake on my part. And that's something that, you know, even looking back at it now, it's like, God, why did I do that? Why didn't I just have somebody look at it? So
yeah, you just didn't know any difference.
There, just have a commercial real estate lease expert look at the lease and represent you. The landlord pays for that fee. You don't pay anything. You don't pay a dollar to these people. It's like a realtor. The landlord has to pay the fee, and it's usually 6-7% of the entire value of the lease.
Okay. Did they have technology in this office?
They had digital sensors and digital chart management. That was it.
So you went in and what'd you do? Did you just do dentistry or did you?
And I just did some dentistry. You know, I started cranking out some dentistry. I started talking to patients and getting them excited and motivated about doing their work and taking care of themselves. And we saw production go through the roof pretty quick. I think our second month there, we produced like 90,000. Wow. We're hitting over 100 pretty consistently for the rest of the year. And
so what do you think was holding the previous, what did you do differently that the previous dentist wasn't doing to increase that kind of production?
Yep. She had no desire to do any sort of production. It didn't matter.
So you just worked harder, basically.
The practice simply did not matter. And the downside of that is that the patients really suffered. I saw a number of patients that had significant issues going on that had never been addressed because it wasn't a priority. It was a social visit for that doctor.
That's a hard thing to do because that was even the case for me going in with my dad, like, because, you know, you get busy and you get complacent to a degree. And then it's like, well, all of a sudden you got it. That's a careful line you have to tread. Like you gotta, and I'm a big believer in like dentists supporting other dentists. And so like, you know, you don't want to come in there and be like, well, she was doing you wrong by any means, like, you know, right? But at the same time, you want to like diagnose dentistry and do it, but you also don't want to be like the new guy that like you know, is the cash cow doubling everything, you know, at the same time too.
Not throwing her under the bus, but having those hard conversations. And that taught me a lot. So I'm glad I got to go through that, but it still kind of was brutal on a daily basis. Like, well, why didn't she ever tell me about this gum disease? Why didn't she ever tell me about
this? Yeah.
So those were kind of tough conversations, but bought the practice in May and the 2013, and then went ahead and got kind of bored in like October-ish. I was bored. Dentistry suddenly wasn't like exciting to me. And it's the weirdest thing. Like I should have been so happy and so excited. I attained my goal, bought a practice, all this good stuff.
Yeah. It wasn't too long ago. You were unemployed from leaving residency after 3 months.
I should be pumped. And suddenly it just wasn't doing it for me. And I don't know why. It was just one of those weird moments. So I went to a CEREC Accept event, and you know, where they introduce you to the technology. It's a discovery event. It's a sales event. And I got paired up with a couple of the biggest influences in my life, a couple of the closest doctors I'll ever know. And they did a phenomenal job about getting me excited about dentistry again. And it all revolved around technology giving us better result for our patients. And so I bought a CEREC machine on the spot, had it installed about a week later. 2 weeks after that, you know, after watching every video known to mankind on CerecDoctors.com, got really interested in this thing called cone beam and went ahead and bought a cone beam. So I went from hating my job, hating my practice, hating my life, to investing $250,000 like overnight.
How much debt did you have at this point when you know, you're 8 months into your first ownership of a practice, and I'm assuming you've got some loans and the practice debt. I mean, give us some numbers here.
Yeah, so at that point, I was at that point in my life, I was debt free from school loans.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, sweet.
Yeah, so I got really aggressive with that, but I was about $1 million in debt between the practice and the equipment.
100% collections.
I was $1 million in debt on a practice that was trending towards collecting maybe $900,000 in a year. So that's what we call being underwater. That's what we call being flip-flop. That's what we call being over-leveraged. It was not a good situation. But I just plowed through and I said, you know what? I'm going to make the most of this and I'm going to make it work. And with using this technology and letting it get me excited about dentistry, it did. Things just started working and the practice kept growing and growing and growing.
Was it hard to implement that much new technology with the team that fast?
You know what? It was, but my style is that I'm not going to turn over anything until I'm an expert at it. So
I like that.
I wouldn't even let somebody take a cone beam. I wouldn't let them position the patient and press the exposure button until I knew for certain I was 100% sure on exactly how to do it and do it the right way. You know, it took like 2 days, but I wasn't going to turn that over until I felt good about it. And then they had to prove to me that they were an expert before I would walk away and not watch them. And I felt the same way about the CEREC machine. I mean, even to this day, I still draw margins, image, design, all of my own restorations. I don't touch it after I hit go, after I hit mill on the machine. I actually don't even touch the restoration until it's ready to go in the mouth because I trust it that much. But, you know, I haven't turned that process over because I feel like it's that important to me. So it was tough to implement, but in a way it wasn't, because it was like, take it or leave it. You better figure this out or else things aren't going to work out for you. And the patients didn't know any better. I mean, here they are seeing me maybe for the second time and I'm throwing a cone beam at them and they're like, what is this thing? Oh my God, that's cool.
Yeah. What year was this?
So this was the very beginning of 2014 when I brought cone beam in.
Okay.
And so plugging along, things are going pretty well. And about 6 months after that, find an opportunity in a cool college town called Bloomington. It's where Indiana University is located. Love Bloomington, love the idea of having a practice there. Found this great, great little practice. It was owned by this awesome doc who'd worked there for his whole career. It was actually physically in an old college rental house. So it was like this cool vibe and it was like right on campus. And like I could walk to like all the cool spots on campus from the practice. And I'm like, screw it. Why not? Let's buy a practice. Let's buy another one.
Yeah. Cause I'm just $1 million in debt and I've only been doing this for a year and a half.
Why not? Let's do it this one. God,
I love it.
When you say that, it makes it sound good.
Well, I think the reality is like, okay, so clearly you have a, you are confident yourself. And I think that's ultimately what I, one of the big things that I want people to take away is because, you know, you worked really hard to get that degree and you're a really talented person. And I'm not talking necessarily just to you, but to like, to the people who are doing this. And so like, invest in yourself, like be confident in yourself because you can be the one, like create your own destiny. Cause that's what, like, that's what you did, right? Like, I mean, you just, you, all the people that would have said, no, this is stupid. No, that's a bad idea. You kind of were like, I don't really care. I can do it. And you've done it. So then you go and buy this practice in Indiana. Now you have two practices. So how did that work? Cause now we're starting to get in the multi-practice deal. Was he staying on? Did you have to fire an associate away? I mean, how are you going to run two practices? You can't be places at once.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that was the kind of the weird situation. This guy had actually, he sold his practice to a group or what this guy thought he was a group. It turns out he wasn't really a group. He was just a moron. He bought the place and had an associate in there who was really not performing very well. And that's who I bought the practice from. But this was maybe 6 months removed from the old doctor selling. So I was in contact with him a lot through the sales process, and he kind of vouched for the practice and was excited to have me on board. So I had this associate. She was really not, our personalities did not mesh at all. She had kind of a rough career to get to that point. She was, you know, in her late 40s, mid 40s, and, you know, really was struggling with this idea of a 27-year-old being her boss, which I can appreciate. So I had to let her go pretty quickly, and luckily had a doc ready to go, waiting in the wings. It was probably one of the most calculated moves I ever made in my life. Like, I got this younger associate to sign up on a Friday. And again, on a Monday, I went down and told the current associate that she was being let go. I was done with her. And on Tuesday, the new one started. So it was like, you know, I felt like I had really planned this out well. And what I realized at that moment, that was one of the biggest highs for me, is like making the deal happen, like orchestrating something, building something, creating this like unbelievable thing, making this all work. That's what gets me excited. And that's what I loved about having another practice. So it was, looking back, it was an incredibly dumb move because it was incredibly dumb.
Yeah.
I did not have my house in order at the first practice. I didn't have systems in place that could predictably be transferred to a new location.
You were somewhat young and dumb kind of a deal. Just I was rocking and rolling with it.
Exactly. It was like, let's just go for it. What could go wrong? You know, that was kind of my mind. What could go wrong? It'll be fine. I go bankrupt, fine, whatever. I go figure it out. And that's a pretty cavalier attitude to have, to be honest.
Sure.
And after doing this now for a number of years, it's tempered my attitude a little bit and brought me down to reality a little. So that place is kind of humming along. And I'm operating it independently of the other practice. It's just doing its thing. I'm doing my thing. I've got an associate down there. I like go down there once a month to put out a fire and then squirt back up to the other practice. And I'm like doing this after hours. I'm the IT person because I'm too cheap to hire someone. So I'm going down there on the weekends to install new computers. It's like, it's a shit show. It's a disaster.
Yeah. But you're hustling at the same time. Like there's something you said for that.
And it's, you know, it caused a lot of stress in my life, both personally and professionally. It probably held back the number one practice from growing because I was stressed so much. And it definitely held back the number two practice because I couldn't give it my attention.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So I realized as I was moving forward that if this was something I wanted to continue, and I did, I wanted to continue to grow. I wanted to keep acquiring. I realized that I couldn't do it all on my own. And I started searching for somebody to come and help me kind of manage the practices, run the business a little bit, help me with some of the things I couldn't do. And I got hooked up with just an unbelievable person. And she's been with me now for, God, a year and 9 months almost. It was like beginning of 2016, she came on board with me.
What's her role?
She is my director of operations now. So she is in charge of making sure that all of our behind the scenes systems are set up. So she runs our HR department. So she does all of our hiring and firing. She does all of the compliance paperwork. She works with our HR support team to do that. She's also in the field. So she'll go into offices and help them kind of implement new systems, help them figure out and dissect a problem that they might be having at the front desk. She coaches the doctors a lot also, because that's one of her true gifts, is coaching the doctors and getting them through a rough time, either personally or with their communication with the patients or whatever the situation is. And that role has actually grown, where she now has two people working directly under her that she's kind of sends off into the field and the practices.
Did she have dental experience before?
She does. So she was a licensed dental hygienist for like 20 years. She sold some stuff for 3M for like 5 years. And then this is where the story comes full circle. She worked for the guy that I went and worked for at first, Dr. Dean.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
She worked for him when he first owned a media den.
Huh.
And she continued to work for the company after he left and after he sold it. It's a small world. It's a small world. And, you know, that's why I always say dentistry is all about the network, and it's such a small, small community. You've just got to be involved locally. You've got to be involved locally. Know who your Patterson people are. If you work with Shine, know your Patterson people. If you work with Patterson, know your Shine people. You never know when that relationship might pay off in spades.
Paid off. Or your reps leave and jump ship.
Exactly. No, go to the other side.
So did you ever have like an office manager or anybody like that at any of the practices before you hired her?
You know, I did, but not, looking back at it, they weren't practice managers. They weren't office managers. They were more well-paid receptionists.
Yeah.
And in fact, none of my practices have an office manager.
Okay.
You know, I don't believe in that. I hate that term. I hate the term manager. There's no office managers.
Yeah.
We've got a patient concierge, and we have a treatment coordinator.
Okay.
And that's it. And you know what? They know what their roles are. And yeah, there is one person that kind of helps direct the day and kind of massages the day a little bit, and they get paid a little bit more, but they're not a manager. I don't want managers. I want my team to manage itself. And really, I want the doctor to be the one responsible.
Yeah, to be the leader, right?
Be the leader. You know, be the leader. Your name's not on the building. It's not on the loan, but God dang it, that's your practice.
Yeah, and even if you're an associate, I think that's something to be like.
It's your practice.
People will follow you. You know, if you're the one that's your license. You got to take ownership of that.
Exactly. I mean, I walk into these practices now that I have, and I'm not the doctor there anymore. It's not my practice. I just pay the bills.
Yeah, you're kind of the guy. Yeah, you're the guy that comes in and helps out or does stuff. But no, I agree.
It's Dr. Olivia's practice. It's Dr. Tony's practice. You know, it's their practice. It's not my practice. So that's kind of the way the team views it too.
What do you think is one of the biggest, what are the issues with why associateships don't work out?
I think that there's a lot of mismatch in personality types. There's a lot of ego involved.
Do you do personality tests and stuff with yours now?
Anyone that I'm interviewing, yes. Yep. Anyone that comes to me for an interview, we will do a personality test.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
It's super important because, you know what? I don't want somebody that meshes exactly with me, and I don't want somebody that's the polar opposite of me. I want us to be kind of in the middle, you know, if that makes sense. I want us to be compatible in some areas, but I want somebody that I can challenge. I want somebody that might challenge me a little bit. And so that's where these tests are really, really beneficial. And there's a zillion of them out there.
And you don't want your whole team to be a certain one. Like, it's good to have variety. Like you need a good,
we need to balance each other out. Imagine if you had an office full of you running around. That place would be chaos, man. I mean, I love your style and I love what you do, but just imagine if like all of your assistants in your front and your hygienist,
yeah, it would be a cluster.
But like the same as you, like that would be a disaster. Just like, I don't want any of me running around. That'd be terrible. So that's a really important thing to kind of keep in mind. So keeping on with the journey, I had Kathy on board beginning of 2016, and all along for about the last 6 months, I had been talking to doctors, various doctors, exploring options and opportunities. And within, you know, rapid succession in April and then July of 2016, purchase two more practices. So number four came on really quickly. And it was a stress. It stressed our systems to the limit, because now I had Kathy who was helping me out, and Kathy had been working with me with two practices, and then suddenly there's four, and they are geographically all over the place.
I mean, are you not just like, oh shit, like what happens when someone calls in and they're like, oh, I'm sick, can't be work?
That's exactly it. Like those are the things that started piling up on me.
Because it's hard for me, because I imagine, like, I think at this point, maybe you have the first one running pretty good, but like, that's got to be hard. Because if your first practice isn't basically running itself, that's got to be really hard.
It's exactly right. And I would not recommend anyone even consider a second practice until your first practice. You could look at it and say, I will be here one day a week and it will still run just as smooth. When you can say that, time for number two. So we got stressed, and what that led to was it led to me stepping back clinically. I, up until that point of number four coming on board, I was still practicing 4 days a week, and I hired a full-time associate for the first practice and stepped back to, we started saying, oh, I'll be here 2 days a week with you, 1 day a week without you there. That quickly turned into her there all 4 days of the week, and I was there 2 days. And then soon thereafter, I was only there 1 day a week. So it was a pretty rapid change for the patients, which was a little difficult. It was kind of tough because, you know, they went through a transition with me coming on board about 3 years prior. Now here I am throwing another new doc at them. It was tough because the team wasn't completely on board with that. So we definitely had some turmoil, and we had some turnover both in the team and the patients, but it's what had to be done.
How do you, and this is something I'll kind of touch on a little bit. How do you mentor, or did you, how would the conversation go with the new dentists? Cause you're obviously not that much older, you know, or very similar in age. So like, how did you tell them you wanted to treat them? Did you tell them you wanted things to work? Did you want them to come to ask for help? Did you tell them, like, I want to mentor you from the get go? Or
yes.
Go over that a little bit. Cause that's a good discussion.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, there was always this thought in mind that I definitely want to have an active role in their mentorship. I want to lead them along the path so that they don't make some of the mistakes I made, both clinically with the team, you know, at home, having that good home life, work balance. And so I made that pretty clear.
We should really ask your wife about that, though, to see how well you are actually doing the homework.
We will not get her. No way.
Let me mentor you on how I do it, but don't ask my wife.
don't ask her or anyone but her. And you know, I wanted to teach them.
Were you hard on them? Like, did you say like, I want to see your stuff, or did you kind of let them? Did you just let them sink or swim? Or
I this is where I learned a lot about the way that I need to lead my doctors. I did for the most part. I gave them pretty much entire autonomy on what they were doing. I never once said, I'm going to check your fillings or going to check your crown margins or any of that, because that just doesn't feel right to me. Right. Like we'll pretty quickly figure out if somebody's a crappy dentist clinically, right? I'm going to start seeing a lot of redos coming in. I'm going to figure it out pretty quick. So I never really wanted to go down that road. I wanted to really encourage them to do some of the things that they were maybe a little intimidated to do, like endo. It's taken a long time to really get them comfortable with doing root canals, or at least starting root canals and getting the patient out of pain. Same with some of the, you know, stuff like extractions, more complex extraction cases, you know, just encouraging them, hey, come on, let's do this. And
what do you mean by just starting root canals? Cause I think I know what you mean. I think it's a good thing to talk about.
Yeah. So, you know, fine. You don't feel comfortable doing upper second molar root canals. Okay. I get that. That makes sense. Those are tough. They break your back and, you know, you could be more productive doing something else. But if a patient comes to you in significant pain because they've got some really bad pulpitis, in my mind, I feel like I owe it to that patient to get them out of pain and access that tooth, stick some hand files in the canals, get the nerve out of there and get them feeling better before they can make it to the endodontist. Now, luckily, I've got a pretty good relationship with the endodontist. So if it's a case that I truly can't undertake for whatever reason, I can usually make it happen that day and get them feeling better. But if not, I need to be prepared for that. And, you know, what better way to be a bigger hero to your patient than on a Friday?
Oh, I agree. Getting them out. That's the time to learn how to do endo right then.
Holy.
When they're already killing in pain.
Right. That's it. So my role with the doctors is one of, you know, leader. I want to show them the way to do things. It's to be that kind of coach them how to communicate, because communication is, as you know, one of the hardest things for us to figure out. So helping them with their communication skills, helping them with their interpersonal skills with the team. And, you know, then I am there for clinical stuff. Like, you know, today was a great example. We had a huge case. We had a huge day at practice number one. And today was my day to be there. And it just so happened I was there.
Just so happened that I happened to kick ass today.
But you know what was really neat? It was, and this was so cool for me. It was so fun to see this. There was this big case. We had a big, big complex anterior case. And it was Olivia that did it. She was the one that took care of it. And her and I kind of worked it up together. We treatment planned it out. We worked through the sequence. And, you know, all along, she was kind of, I think, under the assumption that I was going to be the one doing the work. And she would be kind of watching how I do it. And a couple of weeks before, I was like, no, I'm not doing this. You're doing this. You don't need to watch me prep crowns.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It's pretty cool that you can empower them like that, though.
But I want them to, you know, I want my doctors to feel empowered, because ultimately this should be their practice. And I want them to physically have it be their practice. I want my doctors to buy in as partners. I think that's a great route for them to get a lot of personal and professional satisfaction out of this business. So I want them to start treating it like it's their practice from day one. So doing these cases, it's great. I wish all of my doctors would get jazzed up about doing these big cases. And I know they will. I know they will, because they're talking to each other and they're all hearing how great their day was. And they're going to hear me on this podcast whenever it goes live. And they're going to say, oh shit, we better
get it together. Yeah. No, no joke.
Guys, this is not a threat, please.
Do you kind of have like a core set of things that like you want them to do, or you're like, I want you to kind of get these? I mean, how does that work? I mean,
yeah, our set of services, we really have to think about ourselves and what we are interested in, number one. That's kind of the wrong way to do it. So what we're interested in isn't necessarily what we need to be good at.
This kind of goes back to ours a little bit, kind of.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So yeah, that's great that, you know, veneers are really the one thing that you love. Well, if you're practicing in kind of a, you know, a weird blue collar, you know, rough part of town, veneers might not be a great thing to be super passionate about.
Yeah.
It just might not be, or maybe it is because you're an awesome communicator. But what I need you to be awesome at is I need you to be unbelievably good at just quadrants of restorations, because dental decay is still the number one thing that we see in our practice. You need to be good at that. You need to be good at diagnosing and talking about perio. Talk about periodontal disease. Significant portion of our patients have perio and don't know it. And yeah, we haven't been
talking. I think a significant portion of all of our patients do. Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, those
and
two
that's
things.
Not to do on a total tangent, but like that's a big thing. Like what we're taught in dental school about perio, and like, I mean, perio can be a very big profit center too in,
yes,
in dentistry. Like it doesn't have to be like this miserable thing that like keeps you from doing all the things you want to do. Like it's portrayed in dental school.
It can be the springboard to awesome dentistry. It can,
yes,
be the springboard to saving your patient's teeth and getting to do all kinds of cool rehabilitations on them.
Yeah.
I've seen perio, four quadrants of scaling and replanting, turn into a $30,000 case because the guy felt so much better once his teeth weren't disgusting. And he said, now I want them to look good. And I said, that's great. They're healthy. So now we can go ahead and do this. So those are those are obviously two of the core things. I mean, you shouldn't be able to get out of dental school if you can't do that. And then, you know, now I need them to be really proficient at crown and bridge. So single unit, two units on the CEREC machine, being able to prep and image and design a three-unit bridge. Luckily, I have the, you know, background as being a basic trainer for Patterson. And so I'm able to give them a lot more insight into how to be proficient with their CEREC equipment. Other things that I really need doctors to be proficient at is extractions.
That's a big one. I don't understand how people would refer out like single extractions. I mean,
absolutely not. Like block some time off for yourself the first time, get it done, get the thing out of there, drill away a little bit of bone and get the tooth out and it's going to be okay. So extractions, and then, like I said, endo. I mean, really, bicuspid and forward, that's like slam dunk stuff. That's like slam freaking dunk territory.
Just, well, not to mention in your, you know, well, okay, so did you buy cone beams and CRAC for these other practices?
Yeah. Yep. They're all fully equipped with.
So you bought four practices, and then you went and bought four cone beams and four CRACs.
Yep.
So you believe that much in the importance of digital technology?
Absolutely.
How do you think cone beams change your practice?
Without cone beam, I wouldn't be placing implants. Without cone beam, we wouldn't be diagnosing previously undiagnosed asymptomatic endolesions that are blown out through the sinus. We wouldn't be able to help people with their TMD. We wouldn't have another visual tool to educate them about sleep apnea. So I would say,
what do you think like the return ROI is on a cone beam?
Holy
like on a monthly basis. Like if your cone beam's $2,500 a month, $3,000 a month, what do you think you're generating off that thing?
That thing pays me back 8 times, 10 times probably.
Well, I agree. I want to make that very clear where my stance is on that.
Incredibly clear. A smart thing to do, and this is now going off on a totally different tangent, but smart thing to do, in my opinion, with both CEREC and cone beam, or any CAD-CAM and cone beam, if that's something you decide to integrate in your practice, you need to really set aside the additional money that you generate from that and pay the thing off. And not because debt's bad, but because that's going to prove to you that it was a good decision. It was a good business decision.
I kind of like that.
So, you know, with my CEREC machine, with the first one, when I bought the CEREC machine, my lab bill was about $7,000 a month on Crown Bridge. It was about $7,000 a month Crown Bridge lab bill. So my payment for the CEREC machine was $2,200. What do you think I did with the rest of that $4,800 every month? Paid off the machine.
You mean you didn't buy like a motorcycle or something, or more hot tubs?
Didn't buy a motorcycle, didn't buy more hot tubs, didn't pay myself more. And what I was able to do...
These are wise words, people.
What I was able to do was I was able to pay off that piece of equipment in 2 years. And now I don't have a lab bill. I will never have a lab bill in that office ever again, except for dentures. It's crazy. I never have a lab bill ever again. The consumable costs are exactly the same, whether you do it with CAD-CAM or a traditional impression. The consumables cost the same to like a dollar. So that would be my recommendation for that. But then with cone beam, if you start placing implants because you have cone beam now, if you start doing more endo, you really should track this. You really should try and track your additional income from it. And if you're doing any sort of medical billing, that thing's going to pay for itself overnight.
Talk about, okay, so I kind of, one of the last things I want to wrap up with here is, okay, so you've obviously done really good and things are going great for JP and it's great and it's awesome. Not everybody, I mean, I'm sure you're gifted, but like, what did you do to be able to like do all this? Did you take CE courses? I mean, because I know the answer to this, but what, you know, the whole time you're buying practices and doing this, what else were you doing? Because you didn't just know how to place implants. You didn't just know how to use CEREC. You didn't just know how to do a lot of this stuff. What did you do to continue to make yourself get to this point?
Yeah. So CE is it. I mean, I knew that clinically I needed to be gifted. I knew that clinically I had to, you know, be able to back things up. And I knew with my situation, I needed to be the master at everything that I did, because if things fell apart, I had to be ready to step in instantly. And so that's where I really committed myself to taking a ton of CE in clinical things. And to the point where, you know, my CE budget for 1 year was about $30,000. And it was money that has paid itself off in spades.
Yeah,
and,
no, I agree.
And we just have to be willing to take that leap and go for it. And Sully, what I can tell you is that the biggest thing that helped get me to where I am, and this kind of wraps everything up and gets us back to the beginning, is that I've never once let my ego or my pride get in the way of what I knew needed to happen. And case in point, about 2 months back, practice number two, which had been a pretty tough struggle for me to manage, wasn't really performing the way I wanted it to. And I had to make a tough decision to let it go. And I actually divested that, sold it off. And in doing so, it freed myself up tremendously to take on some new projects that I'm working on and some new things that I've got going on that are a better use of my time. And, you know, I had a few people say, well, geez, why don't you just keep doing it? Come on, you can turn it around. Like, aren't you going to feel bad? You have to get rid of one. I said, you know what? I'm going to walk away. Didn't lose any money on this deal. And it's a good situation for me because now I can do what I want to do. And so I've done a startup with the proceeds from that sale. I did a startup and I'm about a month into that. And so that's another new journey for me.
Yeah, we'll have to hear more about that on another. That would be a whole other podcast episode.
Startup another, boy, that'd be another one.
So a couple of things I want to do as we wrap up here. One, I think it's important. So I love that, you know, your first practice you bought was like a $700,000 practice. Right. Now we said, I think that's a great number. I think it's a really good number because I think it's high enough that it causes you to have to work for it. But I think it's low enough that you're not biting off more than you can chew. I worry when some of these dentists come out and they want to buy a $1.5 million practice. Like, that's awesome. But can you do that? Like, you have to step into the shoes and do that. Agree or disagree on that?
Absolutely. You have to be able to do that type of dentistry. And just because you can physically do it doesn't matter. You have to be able to sell that much dentistry.
Yes. Yes. That's a valid point. And if they do a bunch of implants, you better know how to do implants. Or like, that's production you can't do. That doesn't count.
If they can do a crown in an hour, and that's why they have 6 crowns in a day, yeah, then you better be able to get it done in an hour.
That's a good point. Point number two is that you invest in yourself. I think that's incredible. I mean, you went for it. You took risks. And the big one, I think, like you said, though, is the pride thing. I mean, the fact that you walked away from one, a freaking residency program, two, a practice opportunity the night of, and then you even see it now with walking away from that practice, you know, that's big. I mean, don't let that get in the way of what you want to do. I think that's awesome.
Exactly. We have a tendency as dentists to just have these huge high thoughts of ourselves, and we need to get grounded a little bit more. And really, if I had planned things out, if I had written down goals and objectives for myself 4 years ago, I would probably still be in the same position I'm in now. Except it would have happened in a much more orderly fashion the way it should have, and it would have alleviated a ton of stress from my life. So goal setting and having the right goals in mind and not being afraid to say, you know what, this is a tremendous opportunity right here, but it's not the right time. It's not the right time for me. I can't do it because it's not the right time. And stick to those goals and be true to them and stick to your game plan and be true to it, and things are going to work out great.
So what's next for you? 7 years out of school, 3 practices, rocking and rolling.
Yeah. So what's next? What's next? You know, I'd like to be talking to you again in about 2-3 years and have maybe 10, 12.
Hopefully we'll talk sooner than that. But
well, I have a feeling we're going to see each other once or twice before then. But,
I believe it.
But no, I'd like to think that in about 2 years, we're going to be at about 10 to 12 practices.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a goal.
That's the goal. And I feel like we've got the systems in place now and got the kind of the cookbook ready to reproduce this.
I love it. How do people get in touch with you?
You can go to my website, www.evodds. That's like extra virgin olive minus the oil. DDS.com. You can email me jp@evodds.com, or you can find me on Facebook. I'm pretty active on there doing a lot of stuff, just trying to stay relevant.
Yeah. And ladies and gentlemen, this is someone you want to be a part of. So if you're a new graduate and you want a job, this guy's willing to help mentor and find your practice. So you should call him. I don't know if you're looking for that or not, but if I'm a new graduate, I want to position myself with people like you. So, seriously.
And if I can, for 5 seconds, I have my shameless plug. I am looking for doctors, and I am looking for younger doctors. And if I find the right doctor, I'm ready to put them in a practice. I've got more practice than I know what to do with. And if we had a ton of doctors, things would be really great.
Dude, thank you so much. This has been a blast. I can't wait to do it again. I cannot wait to see you in the S world here in a couple of weeks. We're gonna have a great time.
Oh, it's gonna be good. I look forward to seeing you there. We'll have some sushi or something out there.
Perfect. Maybe a cocktail if we're lucky. All right, buddy. Work harder, not smarter. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Sully.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.